Hey, good morning everyone. Thanks very much for being here so early. So I'm going to talk today about hard X-ray fluorescence mapping of environmental samples, and in particular I'm going to focus on some of the new techniques that are becoming available to us due to improvements in detector technology that are really happening right now. So I'd like to start by acknowledging my co-authors, in particular Enzo Lombi, who's led most of this work, but also our collaborators at University of Queensland and CSIRO and the Australian Synchrotron. So that's a picture of the Australian Synchrotron, which is a third generation synchrotron facility that's been open since 2007. And most of the work, well, all of the work I'm presenting has been done on the X-ray fluorescence microscopy beamline, or the XFM beamline. And there's basically two different systems that are in use there at the moment. There's the zone plate nanoprobe, which is basically using a vortex detector. But I'm going to focus on work that's been done using the Meyer detector, which allows us to do fast mapping. And this has basically got a KB mirrors to focus the beam, and we can work with a beam of 1 to 5 microns. So the thing about the Meyer 384 detector is it's very sensitive. It's got 384 elements, and it basically is so sensitive that it really represents a quantum leap forward in acquisition time, so it can map very quickly. And we regularly do experiments with samples with dilute element concentrations in roots, for example, and seeds and so on, and we can map at 3 to 4 milliseconds per pixel. So other new beamlines elsewhere in the world that are working with different detector systems also have sped up, but still the fastest elsewhere at the moment is about 25 to 50 milliseconds per pixel. So that really just translates to meaning that something that takes 3 days at XFM to map would take 30 days elsewhere. So it's very, very fast. And because of that, there's some advantages for environmental work, and it opens up some different options for experiments. The first thing is that we can collect larger maps in the same time, and when we're working with heterogeneous samples, like most environmental media, that's very important. And I'll show some examples of that. It also means that because we map faster, we limit the radiation damage to the sample, which means that we start to be able to look at fresh, hydrated tissues, such as roots and stems. And we can also start to use techniques such as micro-XRF tomography and get virtual cross-sections with fresh samples. We can also do high-resolution tomography, and we can start to move from just mapping, basic element mapping, to starting to collect speciation maps, and I'll show you how we do that as well. So my first examples are all based on metals in biosolids. So very quickly, biosolids are the end product of municipal wastewater treatment. It's the solid product. And one of the disposal options for these materials is to use them on agricultural land because they have beneficial properties such as organic matter, and they contain nutrients. But they also contain metals. So it's vital that we understand where the metals are in the sample, what elements they're associated with, whether they're bound more with organic matter or with mineral components, and that's very important for the long-term bioavailability of the metals once they're added to land. So that's why we do this kind of work. And I'll just show you some of Ganga's work there. Is when we first started this work, this was the only study that had been published using micro-XRF mapping for biosolids. And at the time, which is only 6 years ago, it was basically the state of the art. So I'm going to show you basically how far we've come in that time, and in particular just in the last year or two. So this is showing a map of zinc and iron distribution in... Okay, so this is zinc and iron distribution in a biosolids thin section, and you can see that there's basically shows co-location of the zinc and the iron. So this was the only information of, well, Ganga actually did a couple of maps, but I'm just showing you the size of the maps at that time. And this is a similar map that we've collected using a biosolids sample from Australia, and the white there shows co-location of zinc and iron. But because we can map so fast now, this shows you the size of that map, which is the same as the one I showed previously. But we can now collect much larger megapixel maps in just a few hours. So that's really just that area there. So what this shows us is that when we're working with complex samples, there's great benefits to being able to map larger areas because we can really start to see if it's heterogeneous and also work out whether what we're looking at really is representative of the whole sample. So this is just using XFM, we were able to collect a dozen of these maps in just 48 hours. So it's very good to know that we can, when we can map fast like this, we can be more confident that our sample is representative of the whole system. And if we're going to take microscale data like this and scale it up to landform size practices, such as applying these materials on land, then it's very important that we know that we have a representative sample. So this is just to show that because we're mapping at a 2-micron resolution, we can really scan in and get a lot of detailed information as well. I don't think I have time to go into the details, but you can see here that this is a quartz mineral with an iron coating, and there is no copper and zinc associated with that, but in other areas of the map, we do have co-location of those elements. Okay. So if we want to look at speciation in the samples, one option is to do a method like Zanes or X-ray absorption neuroid spectroscopy, and this can be done at other beamlines where we do bulk XAS. And basically what we do is we scan across an edge energy for the element that we're interested in. So this is increasing energy here, and we get a characteristic spectra for every different species. So these are standard species that were collected at a different beamline. And this, using this method, we can get a bulk speciation for the sample. This is using a less focused beam. And so we can work out, for example, that the average speciation in the sample is 20% covellite and 80% chalcocite or so on. But the problem with this is that it doesn't give us spatially resolved information, and it also isn't very good for, well, it doesn't give us species that are minor species in the sample, so less than 5 or 10% of the total speciation. Another option is to do microzanes, where we basically map and then pick out different areas that look interesting to us, and we collect a microzane spectra just from that point. Again, that can be very useful information, but it's not necessarily representative of the whole sample. So because we can map very quickly, the option that's opening up to us now is to actually map the speciation. So this is an example of Zane's imaging. And in that case, what we want to do is map the same area numerous times so that we can build up different maps of different energies. And if we can do this to get enough energies, we can basically extract Zane's spectra for each pixel of that map. So this is an example of a copper map taken from a biosolids thin section above the copper K edge. So what you see there is all of the copper species fluorescing in the sample. And where it's brighter, this shows us that there's more copper-rich species there. And so what we can do is if we start below the energy of the edge and we start to collect maps right up through different energies, I can show this as a movie, if it's going to work. Oh, okay, sorry. Thank you. Okay, yes, I can show you this as a movie. So basically what we have, we've started to map at different energies, and because we're starting below the edge and we're going to go up and collect across the whole energy range for the spectra, basically the more reduced species in this case start to fluoresce first. So at lower energies we're starting to see the reduced species, which in this case are the copper 1 species, and if we continue through there, the copper 2 species start to fluoresce. These are copper 2 sulfides. In this case, and we can carry on right up to we get above the edge and all species are fluorescing. So what we can do with that then is to... we can start to extract spectra from regions of interest, and we can start to look at where the actual different species are located in that map. So in this case, if we look at these blue areas, these are the ones that started to fluoresce first, and we can extract a spectra from those pixels, and it looks like this. And if we do the linear combination fit, we'd see that this is basically a copper 1 sulfide species. We can then pick out the ones that came next, and we see the spectra for that area, and then we can pick out these, and basically this is starting to approach the copper 2 sulfides more closely. So this is one way we can look at it, but we're really still working with this data. It's the first experiment like this on an environmental sample. And there are other ways to look at the energy correlations and so on in the sample that we're working on now. So I'm going to move on to some mapping of plant samples now. And this is, I've got to go quickly, so basically I just wanted to show that you can have sample preparation artifacts. So this is why it's nice to work on fresh samples, because if we do freeze drying, we don't know for sure. And this is an example where we see that the distribution does look different in the frozen hydrated sample and the freeze dried sample. So this is an example of an experiment we did at XRF where we grew cowpeas, and then we have the small seedlings exposed to a different metal solutions, and we can start to look at the uptake of those metals. So what all we have to do is basically cut off the root, rinse it, dab it dry, and we put it straight on between two layers of very thin ultralean film to keep it from drying out. And then we put it in the beam and we can map. And these show arsenic uptake into rice roots. This is manganese, this is arsenic, and this is also an arsenic root but of a different genotype. So down here we have cowpeas exposed to zinc and copper. So what I want to show is that here we can start to look at uptake mechanisms by having this type of resolution. And down here, these are 2 micron resolution maps. And down here we can start to look at the mechanisms of toxicity to species as well, because in copper we see this rupturing along the wall that doesn't happen in zinc. So now, because we can map so fast, we can also start to do tomography on fresh hydrated tissues. This is a picture of the tomography setup. And basically, this is a very small root, it's less than a millimetre. It's mounted in a Kapton capillary, and we have some water at the bottom to keep it hydrated, and then it's sealed with wax at the top. This is the Meyer detector here. So basically what we do is we pass the root in front of the beam, and then we rotate it, we pass it back again, and we collect line scans. And in this case, we'd do 200 rotations across 180 degrees, and then we can collect, we can basically reconstruct that using algorithms. Sorry, this is an example of a failed attempt at a different beam line, just to show where we've got to. And this is our recently published example of it actually working at XFM. But even here, where we can map very fast, you can see in this case there's beam damage here where we've mapped at 7 milliseconds per pixel, but we don't see beam damage where we've mapped at 3. So we had to go that fast to basically make this method feasible. So this is a picture of the line scans that you collect in the cyanogram, and this is the reconstructed zinc image of zinc distribution in that root, and this is nickel. So you can see that we start to get some really interesting possibilities opening up to us, and that's with a fully hydrated root that's literally just been plucked from the beaker. Okay, and then because we can go so fast, we can also start to do high-resolution tomography, which is very exciting with biological samples. And this is an example where instead of doing 200 rotations, we did 2,000, and we start to get very, very detailed information. This is germanium in a rice grain, and we'd just like to point out here as an example that these are tiny little hairs that basically go up the outside of the husk, and you can even see in this, it's such good resolution that you can see that they're hollow. This is only, you can see the scale there. Okay, so these are the different techniques that are opening up to us. We have micro-XRF mapping, but we now also have Zane's imaging and microtomography and high-resolution tomography. This is purely because there's been this quantum leap in detector technology that we can go so fast and start to use these methods. And I'd just like to acknowledge CRC Care for funding the Australian Synchrotron for their facilities, and collaborators who've given samples. And this is just a very nice image of a mouse fetus that's basically been fed contaminated soil, and you can start to even image that something so small as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Erica. Thank you for all the information.